Hare Krishna. In our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradayas, it is a very important aspect of our culture to celebrate the major occasions like Janmashtami, Ram Navami, many festivals. And the reason is that, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that the reasons why he comes to protect the pious, to annihilate or destroy the miscreants, the bad people, and to establish the religious dharma. So in the same way, saintly people who are actually really representatives of the Lord, so they are also inspiring all over, devotees all over the world, and they are also following the same footsteps as the Lord. So they actually need to be worshipped as much as the Lord, respected as much as the Lord. And that is for our purification, that we all benefit from that. It's considered very sacred. So today, it's a very special day. It's a disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit. That is, you may see the Panchatattva deities which have been put in the front. So, just on the second from right, that is on the left of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is right in the center, and on his left means on our second from right, that is Gadadhar Pandit, who actually is, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came 500 years ago, all his associates from the spiritual world also came with him. And Gadadhar Pandit is actually none other than Srimati Radharani. So it is, in effect, celebrating the disappearance day of Srimati Radharani. And in our sampradaya, in all Vaishnava sampradayas, the appearance and disappearance days both are celebrated. In fact, in many ways, this disappearance day is given an even more festive occasion or more glorious occasion, because we know that the eternal associates of the Lord have finished their leela and they're going back, returning back to the spiritual world. They have come for a specific purpose and they're going back. So that's one is the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit, and it's also the disappearance day of His Divine Grace Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who is also, you may have noticed, whose murti is put just on the next to Srila Prabhupada's murti. And today we will be speaking a little bit about His Divine Grace Thakur Bhakti Vinod. Of course, if those of you heard the special class this morning, so it may be a synopsis of morning's class. Probably most of you have not heard. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it is actually necessary for us to understand the glories of this great personality. And as you will understand, that even among the greatest of the great saints, and we have had many great saints in the last 1,000, 1,500 years, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's position is historic. You see, a saint's appearance itself is a historic occasion. And sometimes Krishna uses them, not all of them, but some of them may also have a place in history in terms of the impact they have on the world. Now, it doesn't mean that if those who have not been used in that sense are any less in purity. But nevertheless, like for instance, we know Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, he has been used, and that is what he felt, that he was really a puppet in the hands of Krishna, and he was the instrument of the Lord, and he was brought to... It's like a relay chain, and then when the time comes, you know, whoever is in the position, as Srila Prabhupada was, he really took it to a level which has not been seen for 1,000 years. He's the first person who went to the West, and he took the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, all over the world. It is historic, and now we have more than 400 centers and millions of people who are trying to follow these principles. So if you go back a little bit to Bhakti Vinod's position, you will see why it is so relevant, that how he laid the platform from which Srila Prabhupada took a spring. It was like a springboard for him, which he took a jump to take it into the next level. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born as Kedarnath Dutt in Bengal. That time it was one Bengal, and this was in 1838, and he came from a very wealthy family, very well educated in the British system. In the early days, he was actually in the education system in his occupation, and in fact, he was the first to start the English language in the state of Orissa. But then the major impact that he had was when he was as a district magistrate, which he was appointed the district magistrate in the state of Bengal. And it is really there we see the beginnings of the impact that he was to have. And as a district magistrate, he was taken to, though he was a district magistrate, which means he was a learned judge, sannyasis, sadhus, saintly people would come to his home. See, we have a concept that saintly people, or the sadhus, are sannyasis, and they are totally renounced from the world, means they have nothing to do with the material world. And here was Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at whose doorstep sadhus and sannyasis would come regularly, the genuine sadhus. And Bhaktivinoda was also very, very highly intelligent. So he would discriminate very carefully between the bogus sadhus and the genuine sadhus. And the genuine sadhus, he would invite them to his home. He would teach his wife and children how to respect these sadhus and how to feed them prasad and take care of them. So so as a district magistrate, we will come to his schedule, how he managed his life, because that itself is a kind of miracle. But in spite of having 10 children and a wonderful wife, Bhagavati Devi, who was also in the same mood that he was, and all his 10 children, none of them felt neglected, and all of them were great devotees. So right from the beginning, he already had a very deep linkage towards religion. See, his grandfather, he was very attached to his grandfather, who was very a great devotee. So therefore, even when he got married and he became a teacher first, and then he later on when he became a district magistrate, right through, he had that sentiment. And he was, in fact, learning. He was already a scholar in the Quran and in the Old and New Testament. But then when he read the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he found it so profound, it had a great impact on him. And then he, shortly after, when he read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then he really understood the presence of the significance of Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence in this, world and his appearance. Krishna came for the reason. And then it became his life's mission to really take it to next level. And then that's when he started really writing profusely and very actively propagating. See, because since he was very well educated, and he was moving also in those circles, in the literary circles, he was in touch with the thinking that was there among the Western, the Britishers particularly, because not too many Indians were educated, and we're talking of 170 years ago. And in that, what he found really horrified him, because the Westerners, their concept of Hinduism was that they were so contemptuous of it. I mean, they felt that it was very gross, absurd, mythological. There's a hodgepodge of many things. And they felt that it is only deep, only superstitious things. People would only follow that. And only those who, if they're really intelligent Hindus, then they would give up this and become Christians. And if not, then they'd become atheists. Even that was, they felt, was a sign of more intelligence than to be a Hindu. This was the kind of thinking that prevailed when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually moving in. And he was educated in the British system. So he was, in one sense, one among them, but not actually believing. His conviction was not there. And therefore, he took it upon himself to really bring about a transformation in the understanding of what is the real message, so that and what real Vedic Sanatan Dharma was, so that he the Indians who were misled could really understand their own true religion. Now, as a district magistrate, he was so proficient, he was so brilliant, that in the entire British court system in India, there was no judge like him. He would give, because of his purity and very crystal clear thinking, he could give judgments within, he would take 5 minutes to give a judgment, which others would take at least 30 minutes to do so. And then he would spend about 2 minutes to write the judgment, because you had to, the notes that support the judgment. So he could dispose of between 30 to 50 cases a day, which others would probably do 5 to 7 cases in one day. And therefore he was so valuable that when his workplace was in Krishnanagar, but he wanted to live in Navadvip. So when he moved to Navadvip, then they laid a railway line, which is still there, the single meter gauge railway line, which could, just for his convenience, so that such a valuable person in the court system of the British could travel fast, quickly, without wasting time. So that was the kind of importance that they held him in. Along with this, he was also completely satisfying his family, and he had enough time to read, to write, to preach. Sometime before at one point of his life, he was transferred to Jagannath Puri. When he was still a district magistrate. So when he was moved to Jagannath Puri, he was also asked to look after the affairs of the Jagannath temple, which happened, you know, just in a few days we will be having the Jagannath Rath Yatra, the historic Rath Yatra, the same temple he was asked to look after. And the affairs of the temple were completely mismanaged when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was asked to, when Kedarnath Dutt was asked to go there. And it was, there was no standard of morality. All the pujaris also were engaging in illicit activities. Funds were also mismanaged. There was no proper punctuality, no standards, nothing. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, with his, not only his deep understanding of what was to be done, but the authority that he had because of his own stature and his purity, he used it to effect, and within a very short time, he established very strongly the system and a very high level of morality. And he was so strong that nobody could dare oppose him. So immediately, almost immediately, the pujaris also fell in line. The level of morality went up. And the punctuality also was of a very high level. And within a few days, 56 items, offerings were being offered daily to the Lord. This was the kind of impact that he could have. We mentioned earlier that how he was very discriminating, means between bogus sadhus and the genuine sadhus. And the genuine sadhus who were very attached to the Lord, he could immediately perceive. His understanding of the other person's mind and heart was so sharp that he could immediately capture the essence. You know. But those who were bogus, he was very strict, and he never tolerated this nonsense, because he really felt that by cheating the innocent people and misleading them by giving them the wrong understanding of the Lord, there were many who were pretending to be sadhus just because they wanted to either beg or they were actually using the whatever little authority they got to mistreat women and or engage in illicit activities. Some would have financial mismanagement, you know, take funds. So he was very strict. He would get them arrested and put them in jail. He would immediately lodge the charges. So people were, in that sense, extremely vigilant. They knew that he stood for the truth. So he was a man of very strict principles, and he was not afraid. And there is one particular case which actually illustrates how his presence was so important. I mean, how he managed to tackle a very difficult case. There was one mystic yogi. His name was Bhishik Sen, and he was not an ordinary yogi. I mean, he had acquired many powers, and which is also for a person like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a very spiritual person. He understood that this is not unusual, but just acquiring yogis, acquiring siddhis, or acquiring power or mystical powers does not make one a pure devotee. But for most people, just seeing some ordinary tricks could really give them, feeling. And this yogi was special in the sense that he could actually read people's minds. And therefore, imagine, you know, when people would come to him and he would immediately say what was in the mind of the person. He could also say some things which were actually going on at that time, somewhere else, you know. And when people came to know, then they would really be scared of him. At the same time, he was also engaging in some of the illicit activities. So when it came to the notice of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was asked. There were thousands of people who were like his followers, because you can understand if someone can do this kind of powerful display of mystic yogis, so many people would be impressed. And therefore, he had lots of people who were supporting him. So there were people who were opposing, because especially those who, you know, whose wives or daughters were affected by his very bad behavior. But they were in a minority, because they were, the larger public was, you know, extremely. And he could cure also. Like, there were people who had somebody had a spear wound, and immediately he just applied something, and within minutes the wound was healed. So he had the healing power also to some extent, which he displayed and mesmerized people. So because of that, it was not easy to catch him also. So when what Bhaktivinoda did, like a typical judge or a typical very fair-minded person, he never came to any conclusions just like that. He gathered information, he went around, he asked so many people, hundreds of people, he personally went also and asked. And he established that fact that, yes, there are lots of complaints against him. And when he went to the, he came to his own conclusions, and then he said, now we have to act. So this yogi was in actually somewhere near his whole establishment in the in a jungle area. But people, even the the police were also afraid to go. So he had to actually order, and then he took a police superintendent, a few inspectors, and 100 policemen went with him. And because they were not willing to go, he had to lead them. He himself went ahead of them. As soon as he came, this yogi was sitting on the throne, and he said, he started saying various things about, he got up and he very calmly recited a few instances of Bhaktivinoda's life, you know, and many people were there, they were very impressed. But Bhaktivinoda was not impressed, he was very calm. And he told him that, I have heard all these things. He's saying, then so this yogi, who's Bhishik Sen, he said that, you know, I am Vishnu, and actually I can destroy this entire planet in a second. It is my causeless mercy that I am not doing it. And he also had two other assistants. One was Lord Shiva, who said he was Shiva, and the other one was Brahma. So, but people were believing that because of the powers he had. So when he, and then, you know, whenever he, if he wanted, you know, from his hair and from his eyes, sparks would fly. And when he spoke also, you know, there were sparks. And so people used to be physically afraid also, and also impressed with what he was doing. So Bhaktivinoda tried to preach to him, explain to him that this is cheating, this is not the, what you are doing is not correct. And but then this fellow got very belligerent, very angry, and he said that, you know, if you want, I can completely destroy you. You don't know what you're doing. You can see what is happening elsewhere. So how many people are actually being cured by me? I have got all the powers, etc. So then Bhaktivinoda had already done all this homework. So he didn't stand for all this. So he still kept on preaching to him, but he said, no, I will arrest you. So when he said, when he heard this, so he said, if you're going to arrest me, then you will see that all the three worlds will be destroyed, and you will be the cause of it. So still, so the police are being very afraid to move forward, hearing all this. So the Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself went forward and he insisted. But when he insisted, then this fellow got a little bit, he calmed down and he said, what are you doing? You should understand. You don't know what will happen, etc. So he calmly said, you just take this man in the bullock cart and tie him up and take him. So he took him to the case. All the time he was telling him right through about the dangers that would happen to his family and that he himself is at great risk. He started bribing him by saying that, you know, when I establish the Hindu kingdom, I will make you the governor of Bengal and Orissa and so on. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not hearing anything. He took him and then there also, there were so many of his followers. They were actually causing a lot of noise and they were, you know, all surrounding the thousands of people who were shouting, there's injustice being done and how can you do this and so on. He's our savior. He's actually the Lord himself. People were praying to him. So then the case started and during the case, the case went on for 18 days. And during the case, actually, on the fifth or sixth day, Bhishikshen was actually threatening Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was actually conducting the case. They said that why don't you go home and see what is happening? And that day, when he went home, one of his daughters, Kadambini, suddenly fell very mysteriously ill. And they didn't know whether she'll survive that night. She was in real bad shape. Bhaktivinoda Thakur just prayed. You know, his wife and others were very much upset and they were saying that, you know, maybe you should, why are we letting this happen here? And so he said that, let everyone die. Let all die, but this fellow cannot escape. And then because of the powers of his purity and his chanting the holy name, the very next day, the threat completely went away, overnight. His daughter was quite all right. Then almost on the 17th or 18th day, when almost it is coming to an end, Bhishikshen again told him that he knew that now he's going to deliver his judgment. So he said that now your end is near. And that evening when Bhaktivinoda Thakur went, that was almost the last night, and suddenly he had shooting pains in his chest, and severe pains. And he could barely walk. So to the extent that next day he couldn't sleep also. And the next day he could hardly drag himself. Somehow he had to come and complete the case and give the judgment. Then he came to the court and he was in severe difficulties. But he pronounced him judgment and he declared him guilty, put him in jail. And then when he was being led away, one of the English doctors, Dr. Walters, he had done a lot of research about this yogis and other things generally and where they get their powers. And he suddenly jumped with a blade and cut off this yogi's long hairs. You know, just suddenly cut it off. And the next second, the yogi just collapsed. So he understood that this yogi's powers were coming through his hair. And he just collapsed. And the very next second, all pain subsided in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's chest. And then very shortly, in a few months, he was in jail and then he took poison and Bhishikshen killed himself. But the point is that this was an example of how he would stand up for truth and he was so courageous that nothing could deter him. He could take on the anybody. There was, even the British learned to respect him, because even though they used to have the negative views about Hindus and Bhagavad Gita, but then when he started writing, and then because of his own personal example, they started to slowly take, you know, Krishna and Bhagavad Gita and so on a little more seriously. So basically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's whole life was actually how to propagate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's glories all over the world. That was in his constant meditation. He was so learned, he was so powerful, so influential, and yet he was such a humble person. Really, you can say he was humbler than the blade of grass. But at the same time, you know, he was like a thunderbolt when it came to upholding the truth. So people who were innocent and they had nothing, they had nothing to fear. They in fact were very, very close to him. They were extremely protected by him, felt protected by him. And on the other hand, those who were cheats, they were always fearful of him. So in this way, we could say that this one personality single-handedly led to the revival of spirituality in the true sense, at least in the Bengal, Bihar, Orissa area. And in our line of disciplic succession also, from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu downwards, actually, just prior to Bhaktivinoda Thakur coming up, just about the previous 150, 200 years, actually the link was very weak. I mean, we had genuine gurus right through, but the environment had become, there was a lot of sahajyas, a lot of misinformation, a lot of cheats had come in. So the Vaishnavism in the truest sense had become extremely, there were a few genuine sadhus left and they were, dormant. I mean, they were invisible almost. They were hardly to be seen. So here was one personality who actually brought it to a level. So now when we think of what Srila Prabhupada, when he said he was on a takeoff stage to take it beyond, this had to be done first by Srila Thakur Bhaktivinoda to bring it to a level where he brought the single-handedly the revival of spiritual culture. He also had when we study about Bhaktivinoda Thakur or any great saint, one of the things that we always notice, irrespective of personality, the genuine saints we see, that their story is the story of reciprocation between the Lord and his pure devotee. It is an amazing and a wonderful thing that is really almost a dialogue, interaction between Krishna and the devotees. There are so many signals are there, so many instances where we see that that it is actually directly the hand of Krishna and which happens in their life. So, this one such instance was that Bhaktivinoda had a prayer. See, he was praying to the Lord, saying that, I want to establish Sanatan Dharma. It must be established all over the world. And look at the condition that it is now. And especially it has to also go to the West. But, you know, I am a very small man and I need help. So, he would constantly pray that, please send your servant, one of your servants from the spiritual world, to help me. So, shortly thereafter, when he was in Jagannath Puri, his wife delivered a son. That was his fifth child. This son was only about 2 months old, and the Jagannath Rath Yatra was taking place that time. This was in 1872. And since the Rath had to pass by Bhaktivinoda's house. So somehow when the Rath just passed and it stopped outside his house. So his wife Bhagavati Devi, she saw that this was an opportunity to, you know, get the blessings of the Lord for the small child. So she rushed there with the baby. And because she was the wife of the superintendent of the temple, so obviously she was allowed to go up the stairs, climb up the cart and go right to the feet of the lordships. And she put the baby in the feet of Lord Jagannath. As soon as she put the two-month-old baby, the baby just put his hand and touched the feet of Lord Jagannath. And as soon as it touched the feet, the garland fell on him. So when on the baby. And as soon as Bhaktivinoda Thakur later on heard this, so he immediately understood that his prayer has been fulfilled, that the Lord has sent a special representative. So this is where we say that the interactions, there are many instances where the Lord actually gives a direct signal. So this fifth child, this two-month-old baby, he was named Bimal Prasad, and he later on became Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was the spiritual master of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And for all purposes really, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the father, was the spiritual master of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his fifth son. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was also an extraordinary devotee, a pure servant of the Lord. And right through his, he's the one who established the Gaudiya Math. He established 64 temples. He had thousands of disciples. And one of them was Srila Prabhupada. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur could not stop, you know, talking about his father. He was so much influenced by him and so much grateful to him. He actually wanted to take initiation also from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, "No, you should take it from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji." So we'll touch upon that a little later. Also, another instance of how the Lord reciprocates with his devotees and answers his prayers, that Bhaktivinoda had a dream, which he has expressed in his writings so many times, in his many books and prayers and in his songs. He wrote over 100 books, almost 100 books, and hundreds of songs. And all the songs, all Gaudiya Vaishnavas all over the world, practically, whether it is in their heart, it's in their mind, it's in their temple, his songs are, they consume the lives of his followers. We don't realize many times, but for instance, we sang today the Jai Radha Madhav, that is actually written by him. Even the prayers for Prasadam prayers, Sharira Vidya Jal, was also actually written by him. The Gaur Arti, the Sandhya Arti, was also written by him. Most of the bhajans actually that we sing, the largest number really are from him. So he has had an impact in so many ways. So he had a dream, and that dream was that someday all over the world, you know, the Americans, the French, the Italians, the English, the Africans, the Orientals, somehow they will all come together, together holding hands and singing the holy names of the street, holy names of the Lord. And he was hoping that when would they come, he prayed that when would they come with kartas, with mridangs, on the streets, every town and village should have devotees coming on the streets, singing loud, you know, Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan. Now, this was in the late 1800s, and today we are in 2010, and we see that, due to Srila Prabhupada particularly, that all over the world, this has now become, the Hare Krishna movement has spread. So, it is amazing, in one sense, to understand how a dream given, said about 140 years ago, could take place much later, but that is actually a reality. And his dream has been expressed repeatedly in so many poems and books of his. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, one of his greatest contributions for all of us is that he demonstrated how we can be in this world, but not of this world. That means you don't belong to this world. You don't give your heart and soul. The heart and soul should be to understand a relationship with the Lord and with His devotees, we associate with the right-minded people. But at the same time, we have to live practically. And He showed how one can do so, how one can be fulfilling all aspects. and also prosper in that. He was not only, we've seen that he's been a tremendous a father, a great disciple, a pure devotee of the Lord, wrote so many books, and so many historical events, and some few more we'll touch upon. But all of this he could do simultaneously. See, today people have an impression, a lot of people still feel that, you know, if you, your material effectiveness goes down if you take up spiritual life. But actually, that is just, you know, it is incorrect. It is their laziness, a spiritual laziness, and it is just, you know, foolish justification for their own situation. Because we have so many examples of how it is not true. If you take the case of Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita, like he heard the Bhagavad Gita from, it was spoken to him, but if you see his life, he was, nobody can say that he was ineffective or that he was not doing his duty or that he was a social parasite. Nobody can say that. He was an excellent administrator, an excellent warrior, and all his work, he was perfect. So we have so Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in the same mold, where he was really first class in whatever he did, but he did it with the consciousness that the most important thing in life is that we keep praying to the Lord that no matter what happens, how circumstances change around us, and they will change, and they are changing from good to bad, so-called good to so-called bad. The way we look at it, suddenly we see we are very happy because things have gone well. We become sad because things are difficult. Something goes wrong. So our fluctuations and our mental disposition goes on and on. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has shown that how through all this he has gone. He had tremendous health problems in his childhood. He was very, very sick. And those days, medical advancement also was not there. So you know, quite a few times they were life-threatening. So he had health problems, and you know, he had many, many difficulties, but he did not waver from his single-minded purpose. And that purpose was not just restricted to being a genuine devotee only for himself, which would have been very good. I mean, we don't have the capacity, most of us don't have the capacity to go beyond. We are just struggling to at least improve our lives. Here, it was not only a question of him or his family or his country, but he had a world vision. And he had a dream, he had a prayer, which Krishna fulfilled, and he actually demonstrated. So this is what his purpose was for us, that and that is where we need to take heart from. As it is said, you know, Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langate Grim Yat Krupatam Hamande Shri Gurum Dinatarinim. So it said that even a lame person can cross the Himalayas, even a blind person can see, you know, the furthest stars in the sky. Even a dumb person can speak if he has the blessings or the grace of the Lord. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's example is showing us that he has how a person who has the grace and the blessings of the Lord, what he can do. So it is actually a matter of hope. It gives us also hope. And also it is a contemporary example. Means it is, you know, he left this world in 1914. Now, when I think, my father is born in 1923, so he was just 9 years after he was born. So my father's father, my grandfather, you know, who was there. So most of you also, you see, your grandfather, great-grandfather, just two generations away, he was, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was right here. In fact, we have one devotee here who just recently left this world, Valmiki Muni Prabhu. Some of you may have known him. So he was born in 1914, the same year as the departure of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you can say that he was actually on the same planet as him, and we've touched him, we've felt him, we've known him. So it is such a person who came just recently. Sometimes when we think of Lord Krishna and Lord Ram and, you know, Prahlad Maharaj and examples like that, with Satya Yuga, so we are impressed. We also believe in it, but we may not be able to completely relate to it because it is not of immediate past. Here is someone who's just in the 20th century. He was living in the 20th century, departed in 1914, and he has faced many of the broad, you know, he was there during the Industrial Revolution and all these, where the Kali Yuga has descended further. He has been party to that and still done what he could do. So his primary purpose was to preach and spread the movement. And even that also it was historic. Because he started at that time the Namhat movement. Namhat is, Nam is holy name of the Lord, the marketplace of the holy name. Hut is in Bengali, it is it is a marketplace. So it is he coined it that, he phrased it as the marketplace of the holy name, where people would come and just like you have a marketplace where you are buying and selling or you're trading. So here, you know, you come and you are getting, in the marketplace you're getting for free the holy name. This is the way he put it. And he is saying, so he has written songs saying that, why don't you come and take it? It is all free. So he started the Namhat and he, in his lifetime, he established over 500 Namhats all over Bengal, Orissa, Bihar, those areas. And when we look at now the preaching that is going on right through the Gaudiya Math times and ISKCON times, a lot of that has been from the carry over. So the start has come from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time. He was initiated by a very great personality, Vipin Bihari Prabhu, who actually was in the disciplic succession line of Janava Devi, that is the consort of Lord Nityanand, who is none other than Lord Balram, who came with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, and also he was in the family descendancy of Vansi Vadanananda Thakur, was another great associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was, of course, over 400 years ago. But Vipin Bihari Prabhu came in that family descendancy. And Vansi Vadananda Thakur was actually, his special service when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas was to take care of Sachi Mata and Vishnu Priya, wife and mother and wife of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Vipin Bihari came in that, and he took initiation from him. And but at that time, the kind of leader of the whole Vaishnava Sampradaya was Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was already almost more than 100 years old at that time. And so he was actually like the Shiksha Guru. He was the Shiksha Guru, instructing Guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So as our parampara has, there is a Diksha Guru, that means someone who gives the initiation, and then there is the Shiksha Guru. So you can have more than one Shiksha Gurus, and the Shiksha Guru can play a very important role in our life. So in this case here, he was Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj had a major role to play in his life, because he was instructing him several times. And another historic event means where this is history, meaning it is something which will last eternally, something which is unique, where Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj is also involved, was where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is credited with the discovery of the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually came more than 500 years ago. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was there, there was a lot of confusion and people were believing that he was actually he was born in Navadvip, that is on the west side of the Ganges. And again, using his analytical thinking and very sharp intelligence, he did a lot of work. He went through all those old manuscripts, antique maps and all that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he was puzzled. He said that this is not true, because there were old locals who were staying there in Navadvip, who said that actually they recently came crossed from a place called Balal Dighi, which was on the east side, and they had done this only recently. And also he found that he discovered that Navadvip was only less than 100 years old, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come almost 400 years before Bhaktivinoda Thakur came. So there was something wrong. So he went further into details. He also met old locals who said that they were originally from a place called Mayapur, which was on the east side. So when he went through that, then he felt that this was not the right place. And then finally when he read in the Bhakti Ratnakar, which actually gave him the conviction, the Bhakti Ratnakar very clearly says that in the land of Navadvip, in the middle of it, is Mayapur, and this is where Lord Chaitanya will take his birth. So that was the conclusive proof evidence that he needed to establish that actually the real birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Mayapur, which was on the east side of the Ganges. But yet, you know, this was such a massive historical event. Imagine someone were to say that, well, if someone was mistakenly telling us that Lord Krishna was born not in Dwarka but somewhere else, and someone, a great devotee comes and he has to change that or challenge that. Now, even if he has proof, to really get this, it is not so easy, because we are talking of the Lord's appearance. So then he still wanted the final confirmation to so that the world could also establish. And therefore, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was the leader of the whole Vaishnava community, by that time he was about 120 years old. And he was so weak, he was being carried in a basket because he couldn't even walk. And his eyes were, he couldn't even open his eyes. He could barely see. But if he wanted to open, they had to actually lift his eyelids, eyebrows and eyelids, because he was that weak. But still, he agreed to come to that place. So they carried him in that basket and brought him to the place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur felt was the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, the Mayapur. And as soon as they put the basket down, lo and behold, the Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, 120 years old, could not walk for years. He was put in a basket. He just leaped up. And he just leaped up. He leaped even beyond where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was standing. So he leaped 5-6 feet. I think very few people in this room could probably do that. And imagine he could do it. So he was so ecstatic. And he said, you know, he said, this is the place. This is the place of the birth. So then that was finished. That was absolutely the final conclusive proof that this is the place of of birth. So you can see that had it not been for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many things would have not happened. And also in 1896, which is, of course, we know the appearance year of Srila Prabhupada. So it is a historic year. But in that same year, another very historical event took place, that for the first time in the history, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings actually left the shores of India and went to all the universities and libraries around the world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written a book. He used to write in Bengali, Sanskrit, and English. And this book was in English, called The Life and Precepts of Sri Chaitanya. And in 1896, he sent the books all over. And many scholars applauded it, and they wrote very glowingly. And later, 80-90 years after that, when Srila Prabhupada started ISKCON in the West, and one of his disciples in the 1970s, actually discovered one copy in the McGill University in Canada. And that's, so, you know, there was actually proof that, and so this is where, so he laid the seeds of worldwide preaching. And he established in such a way that when Prabhupada came and went to the West, suddenly, you know, this everything started connecting. You just take a quick look at his schedule. We discussed that how is it possible that this, he was so good at his magistrate's role. He used to dispose of cases in 5 minutes. So it was not like a fluke. It was not like guessing that, okay, he could clearly see who's guilty and who's not. He would immediately come, cut through all the kind of arguments, all the paperwork, all the, you know, if you have been in court, you know how it is. I mean, lawyers are champions in confusing you. And actually making you believe you are guilty, or making you believe you are innocent, even if you are not. But, you know, that is the way it is. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur could clearly understand what the situation was. So how was it possible? Now, he would go to bed at 8 o'clock in the night. So that was a starting, if you take from that time, and get up at 10 o'clock. And then from 10 in the night to 4 in the morning, he would write. That's when he wrote his books, his 7 days a week, books, poems, songs. Then 4 to 4:30, he would take a little rest, half an hour. 4:30, he would kind of wash his face and hands, and then he would sit down to chant on his beads. From 4:30 to 7, he would chant. 7 o'clock, he would again take a little rest, and then 7 to 7:30, he would write his answers, correspondence. 7:30 to 9:30, he would be reading. That's when he would actually read. And if he had some visitors, then between 9 and 9:30, he would meet them. 9:30 to for about 10-15 minutes, he would walk in the veranda. And that's the time when he would actually kind of assimilate whatever he read. You know, he would be speaking to himself. Somebody would feel like he's speaking to himself. But actually, he used to frame questions in his mind, philosophical questions, and how he would answer it. So while he was walking, he would do that. And then he would take his bath and, you know, put on his uniform. He used to wear coat and pants, because he was a magistrate. And he had six beads of tulsi around his neck, big beads. And every month he would shave his head. He didn't care what people, nobody had any, with this kind of performance in the courts, I mean, nobody would question it. and he would leave at about 10 o'clock. 1 o'clock he would finish, come back for lunch, go at 2, finish by 5, 5:30. And then he would go, in the evenings he would go to preach. He would go to the villages and then continue his writings. And then by 8 o'clock he would, and he still had time for his family. None of his children or his wife felt neglected. So many of them became great devotees. So it is in one sense a miracle we cannot even imagine. But of course we cannot imitate such a personality, but we can follow in his footsteps. We are always told that when we have great personalities, especially someone who's come barely, who left this world only 96 years ago. In 4 years we'll be celebrating his 100th disappearance here. We can certainly take very practical tips from his life in such a way that we can also be somewhat productive, somewhat capable, which he has laid down. He has done this for the whole world to follow. He would have a pocket watch, so he was extremely, very, very punctual. So this is for those of us who think that being spiritual means you are transcendental to time. He was not like that. In his biography, there's some amazing things which are written about his character. Already we can understand, but you know, some more details about his character, that he was so friendly to people. He was so friendly. People, we said he was like a thunderbolt, but that is when somebody is cheating, he could immediately pick up. He was a friend to the gentle and the ruffians, both. All types of people, whoever came to him, nobody had difficulty. Provided they were not having a cheating mentality. You know, he had a very strong sense of universal brotherhood. See, when we talked about his prayer, his dream, that when will everybody unite? Can you imagine, 40 years ago, somebody having a dream like this, when there was no travel also. There's no question of, you know, if you go by ship, it would take you 2 months to go to Europe. Today you may go in 7-8 hours. And where was the question of cultural affinity? And here is a personality who is actually having a deep prayer, constant prayer, that when will the world... Because he understood that is the only solution. United Nations or disunited nations, all that may come and go, nothing's going to work. Only thing is, if the unity can come only on a level of the spirit. So if you go beyond just looking at a person because of his caste or his education, he knew that this is all humbug. So the reality was that whether a person is African or South American or whatever, or a Western-bodied or Oriental, Asian, etc. So he was having that kind of prayer, and therefore he had such a deep feeling of this universal brotherhood. That's why people could feel very friendly with him. He was never proud, very humble, and even though there were many the governments of Bihar, Bengal, Orissa, so many times they would confer honors, but he would refuse because he felt that will affect his preaching. He had no grudges, never bore any grudges. In fact, sometimes when he had to correct people, warn people or chastise them, people would feel very grateful. And sometimes when people were upset at him, inevitably they would feel ashamed and later on come back and apologize. Because, you know, he never reacted to such events. You know. He was taken into confidence by the government on many occasions because he was so trustworthy. By the same time, he had his own principles, and they were very well aware. They were very clear that he is not among them, though he was. But at the same time, they had deep respect because they knew he was a man of great integrity. And another thing is personal life. The word debt was unknown to him. He never carried any debt. That's another practical thing for a devotee. As far as possible, we should be conservative in our finances. This is that he never had any debt, never kind of was not ambitious in that sense. He was ambitious to spread the world, to spread holy name all over the world, and he actually demonstrated it. But in terms of money matters, you know, he was very prudent and never incurred any debt. He was a linguist. He could speak Bengali, English, Oriya, Persian, Urdu, Sanskrit, six languages. And of course, when he passed this world in the last 2-3 years, he had already taken Babaji's initiation. No, he had a wonderful relationship with God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj. I discussed earlier that God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj, who is also in our line of sampradaya, actually he is the spiritual master of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is Prabhupada. His guru was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's guru was God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj. And then the next in line is Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur and God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj had a very, very unique relationship. God Kishoras Babaji was a, materially speaking, he was an illiterate, but he was a very elevated paramhans. He was already in the Babaji initiation. Here he was a judge, but God Kishoras Babaji always felt that Bhakti Vinod Thakur was like a spiritual master. He was like his preceptor. And he actually accepted him as a Shiksha Guru. So, but Bhakti Vinod Thakur had deep respect for God Kishoras Babaji. So when his son, Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj, who was really influenced by the father, that is Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he wanted to take initiation from him. He said, no, you should take initiation from God Kishoras Babaji. And after a lot of persuasion, God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj finally gave initiation. He had only one disciple, and that was Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj. But now when Bhakti Vinod Thakur was in the last 5, 6, 7 years, he really wanted to get away from, wanted to get much more absorbed in the, on the spiritual plane. So he approached God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj for taking Vesh Diksha, that is, to be initiated into the Babaji role. As a Babaji. But God Kishoras Babaji Maharaj was actually always avoiding that, because he felt that he's like my spiritual master. And so initially he was reluctant, but then when he felt that he really wants it, then finally he initiated him into the Babaji role. And and the last 2, 3, 4 years he was then mostly in his Bhakti Bhavan, the place which was where he went into deep seclusion, and then eventually into Samadhi. And then in 1914, June 23rd, exactly at noon, he left this world. So we can see that, this example is for practical reasons also. And as we go further in the next decades, the next century, Bhakti Vinod Thakur's legacy of his personal example and all the things that he, the historical events that took place, establishing the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, first the Namhat movement, the Harinam Sankirtan that he developed and he had organized and developed, the hundreds of songs and books that he wrote. I mean, everything, he actually envelops all part of our life. The first book of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that was sent abroad in 1896, the dream that he had in Prabhupada, was fulfilled by Lord Krishna. The prayer that he had, he was sent a son who was a ray of Vishnu. All this was actually done to establish. Also, he established that spiritual life is very practical. Spiritual life is also very exciting, and it's also very joyful. It can be if we were to overcome our own misunderstandings of life. Because we react to events and that happen around us. For instance, if you are financially threatened, if you are physically threatened, we see it as a threat and we react and we get panic, we get fear. Sometimes we are embarrassed because we feel because of our ego that we may be actually we may be looking a little foolish in occasions. So all these cause tension. So it is basically in our mind. So if we follow the understanding that actually, the mind is can be best friend or the worst enemy. But if we are surrendered and if we don't mind, if you don't stand on prestige and ego, then actually these things can actually, we can start realizing it. Then we can also get the sweetness of, slowly, the sweetness of chanting the holy name, which we are otherwise pushing ourselves to do that. And he also showed that the greatest charity one can do, the greatest act of love, is to spread the holy name, to spread the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in any way that we can, either directly or indirectly. So all these are actually, as he's been an inspiration for all of us, there is no reason why, on a very minute scale, why we can't do something. Who knows? You may be an inspiration for somebody else. We should never underestimate, because everything works in a very subtle way. The subtle things are the most effective or the most important. We cannot describe, for instance, why we are in the temple today. If you were to start describing, it's not easy. But obviously, it's been so much collection of emotions, feelings. You accumulated, you might observe something. Something happened in your life. Somebody gave you a book. Or you just happened to pass by. So many events have happened. They're all subconsciously recorded. So all these things, the impressions that we have, we may have seen someone, we're very impressed. Probably we are here because many devotees who stay here or who come here, we are impressed with them because they're different from the outside world. So many things are there. So in the same way, if we make an effort, we can also be instrumental in being a little bit of a help to someone else who may be also needing that help. So if you remember that, then it brings meaning to our life, why we are doing what we are doing. You know, it's not a hopeless case. It's not that it's not a kind of a case that there are some who are going to be in that level and most of us will be here. It's not like that. If you choose to be, it depends on how sincere we want to be. It has nothing to do with our material backgrounds, nothing to do with education backgrounds, nothing to do with whether we are man or woman, whether we are this caste or that caste, whether we are 70 years old or 20 years old. It has nothing to do with that. No, it is just on a living entity basis. It is whatever we are, if we take it sincerely, certainly it will please the right people, but also it could also be a help, an example to some others also. So with that, we will end today. So, His Divine Grace, Bhakti Vinod Thakur ki jai. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.